This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Hi, everyone. Fred Heumann with you again today on AM Sports Talk 870 from now until 2 o'clock, and in fact, all week. And I'll tell you, the time really flies. I noticed that sitting here yesterday. Alex Scharg in the other studio helping me out today, producing this show. You heard him host this show last week, and I think he will tell you, as I will, it's a gas. And we'll be here all week from 1 until 2 as we try to keep the spirit alive here. I'm so pleased, no matter who does this show eventually, that they are keeping this show alive, that the late, great Jim Adams and Earl Robinson kept alive in this community for so many years. And it was so sad to say so long to Jim Adams at his funeral a couple of months ago. And then Earl Robinson retired. So I am pleased that WKAR is keeping this show alive. And I'm thrilled to be sitting in the chair of two of my great friends in this business over the years. We are on until 2 o'clock. We do take some open line when we have the opportunity at 355-9527. Or toll-free 877-952-7870. As is my nature, I booked guest-heavy shows today. I love talking to people. We'll catch up with a number of people, including Darren Zwick, the Lansing Catholic basketball coach who stands on deck, and later talk some basketball in this hour with Drew Valentine, the senior at Oakland University from Lansing Sexton, in between some hockey with Tom Anastas and some baseball with Lynn Henning from Florida, he of the Detroit News. We also have tickets to give away today for Thursday night's Wisconsin-Michigan State game. Students aren't on campus, though many will be for that game. 9 o'clock start. You can call right now to register for your chance to win tickets, which we'll give away at the end of today's show. 517-884-4783 is the number to call to register to win the tickets to the Wisconsin-Michigan State game. 517-884-4783. I have filled in on a number of venues in town in my 10 years here, and I've done this one before. It's been a little while, but the 1 hour goes absolutely in a blink of an eye. I noticed that yesterday. So much to get to today, and so little time to do it. And a few things. I just came from the Tom Izzo press conference. Before we say hello to Darren Zwick, Tom, his first public meeting since the post game at Michigan, and after the Spartans' third straight loss on Sunday, he did say it's the first time he can ever remember any team losing three straight games and still being in the top 10 in the country. As I mentioned yesterday, that simply amazed me. If that isn't the ultimate respect for the Big Ten and for Michigan State in some regard, I don't know what is. Three straight losses, they're still in the AP top 10. He actually started his press conference today with an apology. This is what I like about Izzo. He will call you out if he has a problem with you in the media or whoever. He will let you know it. And when he's wrong, he's man enough to admit it. He snapped at Graham Couch of the Lansing State Journal Sunday, immediately after the game, when Graham asked him about a foul that was called. I believe it was the one with, call me if I'm corrected on this one. I believe it was the one Adrian Payne called with 17 seconds left. Graham simply asked if he would do that over again, and Tom snapped at him after the game and said, "Don't go there. Don't even go there." Didn't even think about it. And he started his press conference today with an apology. He looked right at Graham Couch, though he apologized to all of us in the media. He looked right at Graham. It was obviously intended. And he said, "After looking at the film, I apologize. Given the situation and who I had on the floor, I may have rethought that timeout." So he was man enough to say that. And, of course, they have a big one with Wisconsin. They aren't necessarily reeling, but he did admit today that this team's confidence needs a victory, so they'll try to do that Thursday night. We have Tiger baseball to talk later in the show, and I was at one incredible basketball game last night. I go to many games, not as many as I'd like to with my night job on Channel 6, but I went to almost a full game last night. Usually when I go, it's for a quarter or for a half. I purposely showed up at halftime of the Lansing Catholic Williamston game because I just hunched it was going to be close. I didn't hunch a buzzer beater. I just hunched it was going to be close. And I got to get back on the air at 11. So when these games go too long, I'm in trouble. But you don't dare leave a game that goes to overtime, or my goodness, double overtime. And Lansing Catholic and Williamston had this game. It just had the smell. Some games you can just smell. It just smelled like overtime the whole game. Back and forth. And this kid, Jimmy Codette, Well, actually, we should back up. I should set this up if you didn't see the highlights or weren't at the game. And my goodness, if you didn't see the game, you missed one for the ages. Lansing Catholic got a three-point basket. It looked like a buzzer beater at the end of the first overtime by Dylan Rush. They were celebrating, jumping around, thought they won the game. But Williamston had called a timeout. So they put 1.2 seconds back on the clock. Jason Bauer, the coach of Williamston, alertly called a timeout, and I think it was the proper call to put 1.2 seconds back on. So Williamston had to go the length of the floor. They throw a half-court pass to Jimmy Codette. He hits a 55-foot rainbow buzzer beater to tie the game. It goes to double overtime, and Lansing Catholic eventually wins 72-64. It took me 5 minutes to set that up. Darren Zwick is the head coach of Lansing Catholic. Have you recovered yet?
Well, I have recovered, Fred. It was, you did set it up wonderfully. It was, I just must say, as you did, it was just a great high school game. And, I'm just, happy and fortunate that we came out on top of that one.
Well, it's funny. When you're in the media, you look at things a lot differently than coaches and even players and athletes. You start thinking about history and how you're going to tell this story. We're all, in our world, Darren, when I had that buzzer beater, I knew we had a special game. And as I said, that game smelled like overtime the whole way. I don't know what it was about it. I don't know if it did to you. But when you're coaching, do you realize the magnitude that this is going to be a lifetime memory? Don't you even think about that?
Well, it probably really doesn't cross your mind because you're in the moment and you're just trying to do the best you can to manage a game as a coach and manage your kids. And but I'll tell you what, when that finished, I did, I told a lot of the coaches that helped me out, I told them all that, this is, and some parents I ran into, I said, this is one of those games that these kids will remember for the rest of their life. I mean, they'll talk about this forever when they're, in college, in the dorm room, when they get back together, when they have families. They'll talk about this game, the crowd and just the great plays that that kids on both teams really made. I mean, it wasn't a game of mistakes; it was a game of big plays, and which is pretty unique with the stage that those kids were on. The atmosphere to just great shot after great shot, or a rebound, or a defensive stop, and of course the three that Dylan made, and then the response right back with Jimmy Codette with the rainbow 55-footer, and then how that impacts our players too. Now all of a sudden Williamson has this high emotion, and our kids might be a little deflated, but they really weren't. They're like, all right, well, I guess we'll just play another 4 minutes and try to win in the next four. And that was the honest truth. That's the way that they looked at it, and that showed some maturity, I thought, on our players' parts and they responded pretty well in that second overtime.
I got to be honest with me. I had a camera on my shoulder last night, and we're always in a hurry to get back on the news, Darren. And when Codette hit that shot, inadvertently, I took my microphone out there and I was going to interview him. I thought the game was over, as Williamston did, because they're celebrating and their coach, Coach Bauer, did a great job settling his team down and said, hey, we only tied the game. I thought both teams played great with great poise and great sportsmanship last night. You don't always see that in big rivalry games. I said on the air last night, I think both teams should be congratulated.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Fred, and I know Coach Bauer would too. I thought that everybody that was there handled themselves appropriately last night, from players to coaches to the fans. I mean, we had two great student sections, two great sets of parents there last night, and it was just a fantastic high school game, and I think everybody certainly got their money's worth, and I know a lot of people are talking about it today, and you appreciate that when you take a step back and you look at it, you're thinking, yeah, that was pretty cool.
How do you come down off that high and take care of business against Hazlitt tomorrow night?
Well, in the high school tournament, and I mentioned this to our players last night. It's you enjoy it for a short period of time, but then the mindset has to quickly shift, and it certainly did for me when I got home and. I'm watching film till 2 a.m. last night trying to prepare for Hazlitt. That's when reality kicks in. It's like, hey, we can enjoy this, but it's short-lived, and you got to move on to the next one, especially with only, one day in between. And, I got another good opponent on Wednesday, a team that we always have great battles with. So so we just got to move on to the next one.
I don't live in reality. I was up till 2 a.m. too watching film, Darren.
You're right.
That game. I watched the whole thing because in television we only get 35, 40 seconds.
Right.
I actually put a minute and a half of that game on. But after work, I was there till 2, editing every clip we shot so I could save this game forever. I'm actually going to give you a copy after the season. It was an incredible game. I congratulate you for the conduct of your team and Williamston and for the victory. Good luck tomorrow, Darren. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, well, thanks, Glenn. Thanks for having me on, Fred. And I always appreciate everything that you do here for Mid-Michigan Sports.
Thanks, Darren. Good luck tomorrow.
All right, thanks, Fred.
Darren Zwick, the basketball coach at Lansing Catholic. We're going to make the transition from basketball to hockey here, as I just came from a couple of press conferences on campus. Susie Merchant had one. Then Tom Izzo had one. The new defensive coordinator, co-defensive coordinators at Michigan State, Jim Bowman, the former coordinator at Ohio State, and Dave Warner are conducting a press conference right now over at Michigan State. Bowman's not in town. He's on speakerphone. Warner is there. And we're going to try to get one of them on tomorrow. And earlier today, Tom Anastas had his weekly press conference because the hockey team leaves. He may be in bed by now. They leave at 4:15 tomorrow morning to make that cotton picking trip to Alaska, probably the last one ever for Michigan State, for the first round of the CCHA playoffs. Michigan State finishing 11th for the first time in school history will play Alaska in that first round on Friday, and the bus leaves at 4:15 in the morning from Munn Arena for Detroit, fly to Chicago, and then fly from Chicago to, I believe it's, you have a flight in Alaska too, Tom Anastas, don't you?
Yeah, we fly from Detroit, Chicago, Anchorage, and then Anchorage to Fairbanks.
So that's about a 15-hour day.
It's a pretty long day, Fred.
Now, when you went a couple weeks ago, there was also a flight to Seattle in there, wasn't there?
Yeah, we actually had a different route. We went directly from Detroit to Seattle, and then Seattle directly to Fairbanks. And so there's benefits really kind of both ways, but we also left at a later time for that flight, and we practiced before we left here. We're going to get there, and then we're going to practice.
Yeah, and I just saw you a couple hours ago, but your practice is already over. You said that because of this trip and these two trips, you've had a lot of short practices. You were on the ice today less than an hour, eh?
Yeah, we went. We skated about 45 minutes, and we've been real conscious of not overdoing it because the guys need to be as fresh as possible, both their minds and their bodies. So, you know, for a period of time now, even dating back before we went on our first trip to Alaska, we've really dialed back so not to overdo it.
Well, you know, we were mentioning at the press conference today, you just never know. I know it's an old cliche. They all count one, take it one at a time, one and done and all that. But you reminded me and some of the media folk there who know more about hockey than I do in college that Bowling Green was 11th last year, which I didn't realize, went all the way to the semifinals. So I guess that's kind of your battle cry with your team, right? Why not us?
Absolutely. Why not? And it is a new season, and we knew coming into this season that one of the big challenges we were going to have was, we had a very inexperienced team. Well, we have a season behind us where, with the exception of the guys that we lost to injuries for the year and have been out all year, we're pretty darn healthy. And we're coming off maybe our best game of the season. So in spite of the travel, you know, we saw what it took to have success against a very good team who was very motivated to win on Saturday night. And why not us? So I think we're very capable of going in there. We have to adjust. Obviously, the travel is a factor, and it's very demanding. But, hey, we have to deal with it and put a good weekend together to advance. And I think we're capable of doing so.
Tom Anastas, Michigan State's second-year hockey coach with us. You kind of pleaded publicly. I read some comments in the local paper last weekend, or after the Friday night loss to Western Michigan, you more or less pleaded with your team to give everything they had for their finale, their home finale, not just for the seniors in their last game, But for the fans who have supported you with incredible support, and they obviously responded with a 1-0 victory over Western Michigan, a team that needed that game. Do you make a similar plea this weekend?
Well, I told them that, you know, you don't want to be done playing hockey in March. You know, and we have the opportunity to go and play. And, you know, we have some very good teams in our league. And, you know, we really feel that we can beat anybody that we play. And, you know, you mentioned our fans. And a lot of people wondered if Michigan State could get back and fill this building. And I think we've proven the kind of appetite there is here for Michigan State hockey and college hockey because, you know, our fans have been unbelievable when you consider we finished in last place and we were the number one team in league attendance. And so our players appreciate it. We've fed off that. And I think they recognize that, hey, whatever the motivation, whether it's playing for your fans or playing for your teammates, we have to play with that kind of desperation to give ourselves the best chance to win this weekend and then play for another week. So that's going to be our battle cry, and that's been the focus since our game ended Saturday night.
Of course, you're done at home this year. You can't have any more home games. But, Tom, that's been, to me, the biggest maybe plus in your 2-year tenure, certainly the biggest surprise, and I frankly was wrong on this. When you were hired, you talked about putting more people in the seats and marketing it and getting Michigan State involved and doing special things to get involved in the community that make people come out and watch hockey. Now, I've known you for 25 years, 30 years. I know that you're a businessman, you're a marketer, you've been a commissioner, you run hockey rinks. I know that you think outside the box, but I'm saying under my breath, Tom, that's great. But until you win, you are not going to put fannies in the seats. You made a liar out of me. I can't believe the attendance you've had this year for a team that finished in last place. How have you done it?
Well, I give all the credit to our marketing department, really, because I always say that, you know, really winning matters the most. And yet winning when you're going through a rebuilding process is going to take the longest. So you can't just wait, because part of building your program has everything to do with the ability to attract, you know, good talent, so you can have good players and it will result in good and better teams. And so part of the allure for kids to come here are not only just facilities, but they want to see the kind of energy and they measure the kind of interest that the fan base has in your team. And so for us, as crazy as this sounds, never would I want to finish in last place by any means, but you know, we've been able to tell prospects who have come here to say, hey, listen, look at the appetite for Spartan hockey. Look at the attendance. We lead the league in attendance. And, you know, we're doing that with a very inexperienced team that's not winning very much. And so can you only imagine when you get here and we're rocking and we're winning and we're competing for Big Ten and national championships, you know, how energized this building's going to be. And so I give the credit to our athletic department. They've just recommitted themselves and really created a renewed focus on you know, hockey. And I created a little graphic a year ago that says Think Hockey, and I shared it with everybody because I want to make sure we keep hockey, you know, top of mind, because I knew it was going to be hard and it's going to take time to rebuild the team and rebuild the program. But our marketing department and within the athletic department has just been outstanding. I sent a text to Hollis the other night after the game and said, you know, Spartan Hockey MVP this season is the marketing staff for MSU Athletics.
I actually sent a text to Hollis, too, over the weekend. It was Saturday because you know what a baseball nut I am, and you're a big Tiger fan. Because there's nothing like putting people in the seats like winning. The Detroit Tigers opened opening day ticket sales at 10 a.m. Saturday morning. By 10:15, they were sold out. I texted Hollis. I said, there's no marketing quite like winning.
There's no marketing quite like winning. That's absolutely true. And that's why I know, and I have been involved, at least sitting in on the marketing meetings we have for hockey. I think it's important that I'm there. And, you know, I'm trying to share with people my realistic expectations and where I think we would project to be as a team. And, you know, at times you have to use smoke and mirrors a little bit, and I think the fan base here is very appreciative of when the team, now they can view, they're an educated fan base, and they can view our skill level or our talent level, but and they can be patient in that regard as we recruit. But it's hard to pay money to come and watch your team and leave if you don't think the team is really laying it on the line and giving a great effort. And since I've been here, or came back here 2 years ago, I think our team has done a pretty good job of really playing hard all of the time. There's been a few exceptions. Part of it has been a bad night. Part of it might have been inexperienced and youth trying to learn how to compete hard every night. But I think for the most part, when people come to Mudd Arena, they see a team that's really trying to play up-tempo, aggressive, an attacking style, and play hard every night.
You have, what, four healthy seniors playing some point in the next few weeks, their final hockey game, right? Four seniors?
Correct.
What do you remember, Tom, about facing the possibility of your final game as a player at Michigan State and what that did to you to serve to motivate you?
Boy, you know, Fred, I don't think I managed it very well. I was so caught up. If you remember back then, we had just a great team.
Yeah.
And people back then kind of referred to it as the dream team. 17 of the guys on that team went on and signed pro contracts.
Did they really? 17?
Yeah, I think that was the number. And many of them played in the NHL, and we had a terrific senior class that year. And we were picked to win the national championship, and we were number one in the country most of the year. And the NCAA Frozen Four at that time was in Detroit. So it was almost like a dream season that was unfolding. And back then...
This is early 80s now, right, Tom?
This is 1985.
85.
Yeah, so it would have been the 84-85 season.
Mm-hmm.
And so back then, they didn't have regionals like they have today that were at neutral sites. They had them on campus. And it was a two-game series, total goals.
Total goals.
And so we hosted Providence. And we outshot them really bad over two games, and their goalie stood on his head. And we got upset at home in the two-game total goal series. And it just, this dream season and really dream career for me at Michigan State came to this halting end, you know, all of a sudden, without really appreciating or giving much thought to the fact that this could be it. And so, you know, I mentioned to our seniors to make sure you enjoy every moment, and all the players, you know, make sure you enjoy every moment because the time just goes too darn fast. And I really never got a chance to really cherish and take it all in because it ended my career here, it ended our season, and we were all just shocked by that result.
And then in 86, they won it all, huh?
Yeah, and then apparently they got rid of all the deadwood, like myself and my teammates, and they won it all the next year.
Yeah, funny. All right, well, I know you got an early wake-up call. If you have to leave Mudd Arena at 4 a.m. on the bus, what time will you go to bed tonight, Tom?
Oh, I'll probably go to bed a little before 10 o'clock.
Okay, so you'll get your 6 hours.
I get up between 4:30 and 5:30 every day, Fred, so this isn't a big adjustment for me.
All right. Well, you'll have a lot of time on planes and buses to sleep. I don't know if you'll sleep. But good luck on your trip. Thanks for your time today. I wanted to catch you before you go. And as I told Susie Merchant yesterday, and I tell Tom Izzo all the time, we're with your winter tie.
Yeah, appreciate it very much.
Right.
What a loyal fan.
Thanks, Tom. Okay, well, I try not to be a fan, but I root for good people. Tom Izzo, Tom Anastas, and Susie Merchant are good people. I'm not a Spartan. I'm a Chippewa. But I do.
Well, I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Tom. I didn't know he was still on. AM Sports Talk 870. We're going to switch topics. We've done high school basketball. We've frozen the ice for some hockey. We're going to talk some baseball and remind you that you can register still for the ticket giveaway for Michigan State, Wisconsin Thursday night by calling 517-884-4783. We're going to announce that winner in less than 30 minutes at the end of this show. Lynn Henning from Florida, going to warm it up and talk baseball. He of the Detroit News as Sports Talk 870 continues right after this.
The NFL Combine just ended, a week of college football players trying to make the big time. There were grueling physical tests, long interviews with scouts and team managers. This year, Colorado's Nick Casa says he was asked if he likes girls. I'm Ari Shapiro, pro sports and sexual orientation. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That was Talk of the Nation, coming up today at 2 p.m. right here on AM 870.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm Scott Pohl, and here's the weather. There's a chance of snow today, the high in the mid-30s. Tonight, a chance of snow, with a low in the upper 20s. Mostly cloudy, with a high in the mid-30s tomorrow. And on Thursday, staying mostly cloudy, with a high in the mid-30s.
Back we are on Sports Talk 870. We're going to connect with the Detroit News, my longtime friend Lynn Henning, who is a columnist. I call him a columnist for Detroit News. He does write a lot of baseball. Tom Gage is their baseball beat writer, and Lynn Henning is kind of their feature B guy, not B in terms of rank, but kind of their offbeat writer, who covers a lot of baseball, has done a lot of Michigan State sports over the years, has great perspective on that. I don't know if we're ever going to get off baseball today because we're both baseball nuts, but you know Lynn Henning from around here because he was formerly with the Lansing State Journal back in another life for me some years ago, probably back when Tom Anastas played hockey, I'm going to guess. I'll have to ask Lynn that when we connect him. But he's with he have an off day today because I guess the Tigers don't play today. They must not because he said he was free today. So today was a good day to catch him. We're trying to also catch up later this week with Bruce Fields, Lansing Everett's own Bruce Fields, who played with the Tigers in their organization and coached under Alan Trammell, and last year was the hitting coach for the Cleveland Indians, and he has resurfaced now with the Detroit Tigers. Back home, as we say. Bruce is unsure of his schedule this week. I'm not sure we're going to make that happen this week, but that's what we're trying to do. Bruce is, of course, from Lansing. He's the greatest player Jake Boss Sr. has ever coached, and he was a great hitter with the Tigers. Never quite made it at the big league level, did get some big league at-bats, but he's now back with the Tigers as a roving minor league instructor, and we're going to try to chat with him this week, too, as well as a call into Mickey Redman from Detroit Red Wings TV that we're going to get later this week. Rob Port, Hazlitt's basketball coach, who is retiring after this season and may play his final game tomorrow night if he can't spring the upset on Lansing Catholic. He'll join us on Thursday to talk either about his season extending or his career at Hazlitt being over. We're still waiting for Lynn there. Alex, I guess we don't have him yet. Okay, so we have a call into Lynn Henning. I know he's expecting our call, so just give me a heads up while I also tell you that in addition to the boys' basketball tournament last night, and there were some other good games. All we've talked about was that Lansing-Catholic-Williamson game, which is certainly one of the top five games I've ever seen, and I'm an old man. That was a terrific game. They beat Williamson 72-64. DeWitt beat Grand Ledge. This is the opening round of the boys' tournament at 70-58. It was Leslie beating Jackson Northwest 37-33. Parma Western beat Charlotte 53-43. Holt on a buzzer beater tip beat Lakeview 56-54. And Quincy defeated Centerville 71-27. I'm going to answer your question here, Alex, as I talk. Now, can I type while I talk? Because apparently the number you have for Lynn is different than the one I have, and I can see I inverted a number. So let's do this way. I'm going to play a little game. This is going to be great radio. I'm going to inverse it. I'm not going to tell you Lynn's number on the air, but I can tell by my list that we have a number wrong on here, right? So the number that is wrong on there, Alex, is the second three is a five, okay? Does that make sense? That way we don't give away his number on the air. That was a typo. That was Fred's fat fingers. The second three is a five. So if you do that without giving Lynn's number, we're going to connect with Lynn Henning. That's my bad. My fingers got in the way of my keypad. I did that list in kind of a hurry today. So my apologies. We've lost 3 minutes of quality time with Lynn Henning because of my fat fingers. Boy, if that isn't an Uncle Fred story. Also, I want to remind you as we wait for Lynn that the Women's Bidken Basketball Tournament starts this week. Michigan State, as Susie joined us yesterday, gets that first round bye. We'll play Friday against the winner of the Michigan-Indiana game. One would think that would be Michigan, as the Wolverines are the number 5 seed. They face Indiana, which is just an awful team. And Michigan and Michigan State would meet on Friday then for the third time this season in the Big Ten Women's Tournament. And then the Big Ten Men's Tournament is next week. week. We've established contact with Lynn Henning because my fat fingers inversed a number, Lynn, and we gave the producer, Alex, the wrong number. So I'm getting you 3 minutes late.
I think I can put up with that, Fred.
How you doing, my friend? Been a while since I've talked to you.
It has, Fred. I was glad you called, and nice to talk with you again. And, yeah, there's a little bit of drama going on down here at Lakeland, so probably a good time to talk.
Yeah, and several things on my list to talk to you about, and the closer seems to be at the top of the list. Rondon was anointed, I think, by the media, and as Jim Leland pointed out the other day, he was never anointed by us, but he seems to be pitching himself out of the mix, doesn't he?
He was never really anointed, I think, by anybody. I think, though, that it was very significant that a general manager had clearly indicated that he was the guy that he was going to ride with as a closer this year. So whether the anointed term is operative or not, I don't think it makes much difference in the sense that the guy who runs the team and the roster was expecting Bruce Rondon to be the closer. Now, this runs averse to everything that Dave Dombrowski's ways have been about, Fred, and you know that, too, because he is very buttoned down, very, very all hairs in place. And for him to have entrusted a job as important as closer to a 22-year-old who hadn't yet pitched in the big leagues tells you that he had uncommon faith in this kid's talent. But right now, it's more than a bumpy road.
Well, and then there's a new deal in the mix. I read today. Now, this is an opinion, a column you wrote today, Lynn, and I'm just nitpicking at it now. I haven't read the whole thing that Rick Porcello writes, Lynn Henning, could be an option as the Tigers' closer. This is your perspective, right? I don't see any quotes on this.
You'll notice that Leland did respond to it when I asked him about it yesterday. And what he said was, we are looking at any and all options right now. I can tell you that, in fact, all options, including Porcello, are on the table organizationally right now. I don't think that it will end up that way, Fred, and I don't think they expect it will end up that way. But right now, given that Rondon has blown up before their eyes, at least temporarily, they have to think about who's going to handle a ninth inning situation. And it's not as easy a question to answer as a whole group of back-end relievers might portend there. They've got a real problem here figuring out who they can throw out there on a regular basis, who can throw strikes, and who can expect to get people out. Now, Porcello is really trade bait. He's a starting pitcher, and they have five starters, and he is really the guy that they've been looking to upgrade in other ways. But now that they have an emergency at the closer spot, they're either going to consider trading him for closer, and there aren't really many on the market that they can even effectively pursue, or in a pinch, again, they might end up going with someone of his particular style in an emergency situation. So they're right now is no closer to an answer than you and I are in this conversation.
Did Porcello go four innings yesterday because he was being showcased, or was that the design?
No, he threw so few pitches in the first couple of innings. This kid has really been good this spring, and I don't know that that should be a big surprise, Fred, because he's always had the horsepower. What he really had to do, I think, was grow up. And again, I think fans forget this kid's 24. He shouldn't, by right, be even coming into a prime until another 2 or 3 years. And he's already got four good seasons under his belt, four meaning that he's racked up a lot of innings and given the team a chance to win. Now, what's been out of sync is his secondary pitches primarily. And this spring you have seen a different Rick Porcello because he bagged his slider, which really was the problem pitch last year, has been concentrating on the curve to go with his sinker and a four-seam. His fastballs have been very, very good. His curveball is really a very good option for him right now. He gets it across. It runs in about 78. And with a changeup that he's always had pretty good control over, he suddenly got a very effective pitcher here. So either way here, I think he's going to loom large. He's either a trade chip or he's an emergency option if things really get bad as they look for closer candidates.
Lynn Henning is with us on Sports Talk 870. I'm going to ask you three questions in one and have you respond. How many games do you think Torrey Hunter will play in right field? Will Brennan Bosch be here to play any games when the season starts? And who's their regular left fielder, Dierks, Castellanos, Berry, or a combination of the three?
Dierks will be primarily their starting left fielder if he's healthy. And he should be. You should be able to count on him, Fred, for 100 games or so out there. Torrey Hunter will be in right field. I don't see anything changing there. He's their everyday right fielder. He'll clean up the defense out there, which was, again, a bit of an obstacle last year. So he's pretty well nailed down. And your third question, I'm forgetting.
How many games Torrey Hunter will play in right field?
Well, yeah, I think he'll play 120. I think he'll play 120, 130, 140 somewhere.
Well, maybe the Bosch element was the other. Will he be here on opening day?
Bosch. I don't think so, and I'll tell you why, Fred. He's missed 2 weeks here with his intercostal muscle problem, of course, which is a very vogue injury these days. But that thing has tied him up, and he's just getting his first swings in a game today against Western Michigan. They've got an off day. They don't really have a place for him defensively, and so he'd have to hit his way onto the roster. Everyone has thought, including myself, that he probably would end up as trade bait. Now, if he's healthy and he swings the bat the way Brennan Bosch could for an entire season, he's a stick of dynamite. But that's what you don't know. And so you're going to be tempted to say he goes in and he goes out. And now he's got a little bit of a health problem. He's had a couple of those. And so he's probably not a guy that you rely on tremendously. So for that reason, I guess my final analysis would be I think he's included in some kind of a trade package, and if I had to bet, I don't think he'd be there opening day, but who knows.
When I had you on, I believe it was last summer, Lynn, on a different venue in this radio market, you were talking about Justin Verlander, were fairly outspoken at the time about his quirky behavior of late at the time, his breaking off a relationship with his longtime girlfriend to allegedly date Kate Hudson, who they still deny. How is your relationship with Justin, and is he acting any less quirky these days?
I don't know that I used the word quirky, Fred. I think there was a lot going on in his personal life back then, which is certainly not uncommon for a single guy who's 29 and who has his celebrity. Your social life tends usually to be pretty colorful, and it certainly can bounce around a little bit. And I think that's the only thing that struck me last year is maybe being a little bit off the center lane, but not uncommonly for someone, again, of his age. And I don't think it certainly had any bearing on his performance. I don't know what his status is this spring. He doesn't really talk about his personal life. He and I don't really have a conversational relationship. I don't know that he has that many with that many people anyway, but we don't. And so I don't know anything about Justin Verlander other than his skills, his abilities that are evident to everyone, and how important he is at the top of the rotation. But what's happening in other aspects of his life, no clue, zero.
Well, never mind his personal life. Are you disappointed you don't have a more conversational relationship with him? I don't remember you writing anything real critical of Justin.
No, he decided, 3 years or so ago, that for some reason he blindsided me out in Seattle one night after a game, and it was like somebody was trying to pick a fight or instigate a fight. It just came completely out of the blue. I never understood it. Still don't understand what it was about. And then all it was going to take was one tough poem, which I did write, I think it was 2 years ago. It was 3 years ago. It was mid-season. And he wasn't pitching very well. He was not pitching like the ace he needed to be for that team. And I wrote an appropriate column just saying, because the manager was fed up, the front office was fed up, everybody was at that time. And this happened in the span of season or of a career, certainly it does, even to with the best pitchers. So it wasn't anything that was toxic.
Yeah.
But he went crazy over that, and that was all he was looking for.
Mm.
Really was a chance at that point to lower the boom on me. And I don't really understand what it's been about, but I can also tell you, Fred, it's not like I'm out there isolated. He really doesn't have what you would call a lot of interactive relationships that I can see in the clubhouse, or certainly even on a conversational basis with many media people. So he's very much unto his own drumbeat, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. I guess I wish it was more cordial. It certainly makes for a better professional conversation, but honestly, Fred, that one I just sort of abandoned ship.
Yeah, I get it. Jim Leland is another guy, talk about media sensitive. I get a feeling from a distance, and I don't know him well, Lynn, I wish I knew him better, that he prefers writers to broadcasters. That's an outside opinion, and I don't know what that's about other than he's the old school manager. He should have played the manager in Major League, but he seems to have a short fuse with talk show hosts, broadcasters, and fans who question his lineup. He swears he's going to change this year. Do you believe him?
I just wrote a magazine piece on him for Our Magazine in Detroit, H-O-U-R, cover piece, I think, for April. And I really got into the psychoanalysis of Jim Leland. And one of the things I did talk about was his post-game press conferences. And he is very uncomfortable doing those live TV shots with the FSD guys.
It's obvious.
The lights are on.
It's obvious.
Yeah, and it is. And that's really at the root of a lot of his problems, I think, with a lot of fans.
Because that's all we see, right?
That's right. That's right. And they don't always enjoy his personality. They don't like it that he's sitting there with a plate of food and sometimes half-eating and half to, they don't like it. And that, I'm convinced, has been an agitator in terms of relationship. Now, when the lights go off, you know, that's when we can ask the very same questions when we have our session with him. But there's a more conversational, less pressured atmosphere at that point. He doesn't have to worry about what he says, you know, whether it gets a little bit loose with the language or whatever. He can at least address the crux of the question and the issue, and he does so in very good fashion. I find him to be very, very good in that regard. He doesn't duck things. He can get a little bit short fused, but not as much as most managers. I can also tell you that, given the quantity of time he spends and the utter volume of questions he deals with, Fred, I think he's very, very good. But you're right, at that point. Now, on the radio side, he doesn't care for provocative talk radio.
Mm-hmm.
He finds that that is basically nothing more than cherry bombs waiting to be lit over a particular debate or something like that. He doesn't like that kind of dialogue, and that is what explains that particular hostility.
Right. I'll never forget when he signed for another year, he said, "Joe from Royal Oak won't be very happy." And that was like to all the – I thought that was a great line.
Yeah, he really does tend to have a very good relationship with those people, for instance, with the fans.
Yeah.
When he runs into them, unlike a lot of baseball people or sports celebrities, he allows himself to be, you know, pose for the picture, sign
right.
the autographs.
Yeah.
They could ask him about a second guess, he'll explain it. He's good with people.
Yeah.
It just doesn't always come across that way on camera.
I have friends that hang out in Royal Oak where he lives. They said he's great with the people when they come up to him. Time goes so fast. Give me how many games the Tigers will win and whether they'll win the division and by how many games before we say goodbye, Lynn.
I picked them to win, I think, 90 or 92 last year. Would they win 89?
I
think they were better than the year before. Fred, I'm going to say, I'll go with that same pick this year. I'll say 92 on the top side. They're a better team. And I don't think you'll see the toing and froing that you saw last year. You'll see a more consistent product. I think they'll win the division. I think they'll win it fairly comfortably in September.
All right, Lynn, always a pleasure. It goes so fast. We'll do it again. I enjoy your updates and the way you write for people of your Detroit News and online, and I'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for your time today.
You're welcome, Fred. Nice talking with you, buddy.
All right, Lynn Henning of the Detroit News joining us. We're up against it. We have our tickets to give away. One last chance to call to register for the tickets, 517-884-4783. We'll take a break, give away the tickets, and catch up with Drew Valentine of Oakland University and from Sexton High School right after this on Sports Talk 870.
On the next Fresh Air, Sandra Day O'Connor, the first woman to serve on the Supreme Court. When she graduated from law school in 1952, she called at least 40 law firms.
And not one of them would give me an interview. I was a woman, and they said, we don't hire women.
Justice O'Connor has a new book called Out of Order. Join us.
Today's weather, a chance of snow with a high of 34 degrees. There's also a chance of snow tonight. Look for a low of 28. Mostly cloudy Wednesday, the high 35, and mostly cloudy with a high of 36 expected on Thursday. This is Scott Pohl.
That is Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 p.m. right here on AM 870 WKAR Radio. Okay, we're still with me. It's just a rookie, you know. You know, Alex, I'm just a rookie, so I didn't know I was still on. Okay, my bad. We're still waiting for Drew Valentine to catch up with us. He's the Oakland University senior who was a star here at Lansing Sexton High School and has had a wonderful career with the Grizzlies of Oakland University, and we're trying still to catch him before we run out of time here today. So we'll try to do that and tell you that Oakland University is in the conference playoffs in their league. They'll play Sunday in South Dakota, so this is it for Drew. It's his senior season. He was injury riddled earlier in the year. In fact, his dad Carlton told me at one time that he even tried to talk him into redshirting, and Drew wanted no part of that. He wanted to play. This is his senior year. He played through it. Has been playing much better, more healthy, and thus the Oakland University has played much better coinciding with Drew's health. They've won 8 of the last 10 games, having lost a gut-wrencher to close the regular season on Saturday, and of course they open the conference tournament on Sunday. So we're still waiting to Drew. If he gets us too late, we'll rebook him for tomorrow when we have a little more time. We are running out of time here on today's show, Sports Talk 870. We mentioned earlier, and I didn't get into this with Lynn Henning because I had so many directions to go, and we apologize for a little bit of a bad connection, but I think you understood what he was saying, even though it looks like we had a bad... I kept thinking about calling him back, and then that takes two or three more minutes. But Rick Porcello, who he writes today, Lynn does, that is an option for the Tigers' closer. It's been all over the papers this week that Porcello, 24 years old, is a very strong possibility of being a Texas Ranger. The Rangers have looked at him, have inquired about Porcello, and I'm a guy who the last few years has said, you know, I know he has a wonderful arm and he's only 24 years old, but with where the Tigers are in pitching, I've seen enough of Rick Porcello. To me, he's had his chance. He's been given ample opportunity to make hay with the Tigers, and I don't think he's been strong enough to argue that they should keep giving him another chance. I think he's a five-inning pitcher. That's just my perception of Porcello. I think he gives you five decent innings. And I know in this era of relief pitchers and eight pitchers a game in a 3-2 contest that bullpens are everything, but I think you need your starting pitcher to give you six or seven innings once in a while. And I just believe that Porcello is a five-inning pitcher and has been that. So if they could get a closer, a decent middle infielder, a couple of relievers, maybe even draft picks, with the development of Smiley, who I like, and the starting pitching where it is, I would be prone to trade Porcello. That said, the adage in baseball, the old adage, I was told once that old adage is redundant, that adage is old. I got to look that up. I was told that in the last few years. We all say old adage. I hear that's a redundancy. Old is adage. but we'll do that lesson another day. At any rate, the adage is that you can never have enough pitching, and I do believe that. You don't know what pitcher is going to go down. Invariably, in a 162-game season, you're going to have pitchers on the disabled list. It may be Verlander. It may be Scherzer. Somebody's going to have a sore shoulder. It may be Smiley. Somebody could be lost for the year, and if you trade Porcello, you're going to say, man, I wish we'd have held on to Rick Porcello. So I'm not going to trade him for a can of meatballs. You got to get something for him. If you can upgrade somewhere else, I think he's tradable. If not, then I go to that adage, or old adage, if you will, that you can never have enough pitching. Did you see in golf that Rory McIlroy came out today and admitted that he made a mistake last weekend in withdrawing from the Honda Classic? If you remember, on Friday, he pulled out midway through the round. He was, what, 7 over par. And his agent said that his head was not in the right place and he had a toothache. Well, the toothache was real. That was not made up. But McIlroy has told Sports Illustrated in an article coming out this week that it was a reactive decision for him to pull out of the tournament. And he said he shouldn't have done it. What I should have done is taken my drop, chipped it onto the green. He was struggling that one hole. Try to make a 5, play my hardest on the back 9. Even if I shot an 85, okay, what I did was not good for the tournament, not good for the kids and the fans who were out there watching me. It was not the right thing to do. And I commend him for that, because it wasn't the right thing to do. That just tells you that if things aren't going your way, walk off the course and quit. That is John Daly-esque. And I commend, I was sorry to see that McIlroy do it. I was disappointed that he did that, but I kind of wrote it off as that I've had toothaches. That sometimes toothaches can debilitate you. They can put you in bed. But, you know, he admits now that that wasn't the thing to do, so good for him. Sticking with golf, Jack Nicklaus says today that Tiger Woods' quest to win 18 professional majors, Jack says he better hurry. This is Jack, who has the record, says that Tiger, who's 4 majors behind him in that record of 18, he said he better get with it. But he didn't say that critically. He's a Tiger Woods fan. He says he still thinks he can do it. He'd support it. I'm sure when he did it, Jack would be right there to welcome him and congratulate him. I get the feeling that Jack likes Tiger. I really do. And I think he would endorse him and welcome him to that fraternity if and when Tiger ever gets there. I thought it was a no-brainer a couple years ago. I'm starting to wonder, but I still think he'll do it. So we're going to swing and miss on Drew Valentine today. He will call that line, Alex, so please book him for me tomorrow, or I'll catch up with him later. Because if he calls right now, it's too late. It's time really now, right, isn't it, to give away the tickets?
It is indeed.
Okay, Alex, help me out here. We have a ticket giveaway for what? We have 2 tickets for Wisconsin-Michigan State tomorrow night, or Thursday night?
That's right, and then keep staying tuned for tomorrow's show as we'll start the giveaway for the Northwestern tickets.
Oh, you have more tickets.
Right,
we have you are Mr. Santa Claus today.
Hey, WKAR, not just me. But okay. Listen, here we go. The right. Two winners for the pairs, for the 2 pairs of Wisconsin tickets. The first winner, Dr. Timig from DeWitt, and the second winner, Steve Mallett from Ada. Congratulations to the two of you.
All right, Steve and Dr. Timmick, congratulations. You're going to see Michigan State and Wisconsin at 9 o'clock Thursday night. And I mentioned earlier, I asked Tom Izzo about this today, if he's concerned because the students aren't on campus. And he admitted that he is a little concerned, but a lot of students have committed to stick around, come back. You know the place would be full. Michigan students were on break Sunday, and that place was rocking. So I think it was a legitimate question and probably a legitimate concern, but I don't think Breslin's going to be a quiet place Thursday at all. And I think, and Tom Izzo agrees, so does Mark Hollis, he told us this yesterday, that Breslin this season has been as energized as any time that I can remember in the last 5 or 10 years. Yet I think Izzo was getting frustrated that it wasn't the pit, the barn, the place, some of the places they play on the road to play in. And I think this year it has been. Whether that's schedule related or what that's related to, the team's start, the kind of start they had to get out of the gate, whether people have kind of jumped on the bandwagon, whatever. Maybe it's marketing, maybe it's the relocation of some seats. But Breslin is again a pit to play in, and the national broadcasters are recognizing it. All right, that's our show today. We'll have much more for you tomorrow. We thank our guests, Darren Zwick, Tom Anastas, Lynn Henning. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Fred Heumann with you. See you tonight on 6 and 11 on Channel 6. See you tomorrow here on Sports Talk 870.
From NPR News.
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.